Chris Johnson's a senior hockey writer and insider for Sportsnet. You can follow him on Twitter at ReporterChris. Have you dried away your tears yet, Chris, after watching Garrett Sparks?
I have. I'm not sure if Garrett has, and, you know, that's the great thing. I mean, what I thought was really cool, Jeff, about last night was we all kind of got to meet this guy over the course of the evening. I mean, it's not as though he's, you know, he's not like a William Nylander, the type of prospect that's been much discussed and written about and talked about. And when he does eventually make his NHL debut, people will already feel like they know him. I mean, in Garrett Sparks, you had someone that a lot of fans wouldn't be familiar with, and you see his parents in the stands on the broadcast last night, and then obviously after the game when he broke into tears, was a pretty sincere and genuine moment from him.
Yeah, you know, and I made the point in the first hour that it's kind of remarkable, and I was thinking of this as I was watching that. You know, all the stuff we were talking about last year's collection of Toronto Maple Leafs and how unlikable they were for a variety of reasons, and not to rehash those reasons, but just how they were a hard team to cheer for. And, you know, here's a guy that if you're a Toronto fan, and we don't know where his career is going to go. We may have our suspicions where it's going to go. But here's a guy where if you're a Toronto fan, you're probably going to watch his next start and be openly rooting for the guy.
You'll probably be rooting for him for a long time, you know, no matter how many starts he ends up getting on this tour of duty in the NHL. I mean, I think that's something that's going to stick with him, that kind of moment. And, you know, Brendan Shanahan himself, Jeff, has talked about that. I remember at the last year, at the season-ending press conference, you know, he said he wants players that want to play for the team, that show sort of an open pride in being part of the organization. And, you know, it was a clear sort of shot at, you know, without exactly saying it, was saying that he felt that there was too many on last year's team that didn't feel that way. But now, I guess, as you're ushering in some new players and new faces, you know, it's an opportunity to get to know some other players and see that they are proud to be part of the organization and, you know, might even be able to help it get to a better days in time here.
Should mention, by the way, that Garrett Sparks will join Hockey Central at noon this afternoon on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Sportsnet. You know, and it's kind of odd too, because in a lot of ways you can make the case that if Garrett Sparks turns into Scott Darling or something like that, Chris, you can make the case that of all the goaltenders, or of the three goaltenders here, he's the one most likely to be back next year.
Well, certainly, because the club controls his future in terms of, he doesn't need a new contract, but he's a restricted free agent, and you know, based on his age and his performance this year in the AHL, I mean, he's a legitimate prospect for the Leafs now. I don't want to portray it at all as though last night was just sort of like a Rudy moment and we're never going to hear from this guy again. And I mean, what really bodes well for him is when you see goaltenders in particular perform in the lower levels of pro hockey, be it the ECHL where he had the best save percentage last season, or the AHL where he's been one of the best goalies this year, that tends to carry over to the NHL. That usually is shown not to be a fluky, you know, performance level that is unsustainable. I mean, sometimes there are players that put up big numbers in the NHL as forwards that they can't make the leap. But usually for goalies, they can. And, you know, it's only one game for Garrett Sparks. And, you know, I'm not certain how long we'll see him around right now. But in the future, you know, this is a legitimate prospect, as I mentioned, for the Leafs. And then a guy, you know, that I think is going to, you know, further, you know, I guess, cloud the waters when it comes to the goaltending of today and tomorrow as the Leafs look to make some decisions there.
Chris, what are the Leafs' options with Jonathan Bernier? I mean, what could they do with this guy?
Well, the most likely option that I think we're going to hear discussed, especially if Sparks plays well and James Reimer returns from his injury in the near future, is, you know, they do potentially have the option to send him to the American Hockey League on a two-week conditioning stint. It can only last as long as that 2 weeks. He doesn't need waivers or anything to go there, and they can only do it the one time this season. But that, I would think that's going to become a possibility, or there's at least a chance of that. I mean, beyond that, you know, they can explore trade routes. They can, I guess, contemplate putting him on waivers and losing him for nothing, which I think is an unlikely option at this point. But as long as the other two guys are playing well and Reimer is healthy, I mean, we might have a three-goalie situation here for a little while, three healthy goalies, if Reimer returns soon.
How do you think the rest of the room? How do you think the dressing room will respond if Bernier, if somehow there's an indication of, I don't want to say favoritism to Bernier, but if there's an indication of, well, we have this guy under contract for a while, we really can't do anything else with him, we kind of have to sort of need to dress him and play him. How do you think that would go over in that dressing room right now? Because, I mean, the one thing one of the things I really like about what Mike Babcock has done is I really do get the sense that in addition to talking about culture change and all this stuff, I mean, he realizes that one of the ways you can enact culture change is to reward good performance and sit guys who aren't performing well. I mean, we saw what he did with Peter Holland. And reputation only counts for so much with Mike Babcock. How do you think the reaction in the dressing room would change, or what the tone would be like if somehow Jonathan Bernier is still there and goes into a regular rotation?
Well, I think if anything, it's unlikely we're going to see that because there's been no favoritism. I mean, I guess the closest thing to favoritism might have been giving him the number one job coming out of training camp, you know, sort of not affected by what the performances were during the couple weeks of training camp and the exhibition games. But what's really struck me, I think Mike Babcock is a pretty plain guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any games here with what he's saying, and he's been very, very critical about Jonathan Bernier. Really hasn't, in my estimation, gone out of his way in any way to defend his poor performances or to make excuses for them or you know, to say we're going to be patient with him. I mean, it's quite the contrary. He's basically said we've given him the opportunity. He's not taking it. We're giving it to someone else. So if the response in the room, I would think, is that everyone else, and we've seen it to a lesser degree with the other positions, they'll be on guard. I think everyone knows that the sort of built-in loyalty isn't there yet for anybody. And, you know, even someone like Jonathan Bernier, the anointed number one, a guy with a sort of a more favorable contractual situation for the organization, you know, someone, if you're looking at it from that, through that glass, should, you know, probably be getting a bit more benefit of the doubt to try to get him back to where he is, just because you know, otherwise it could create a problem. You know, all that's been thrown out the window, and everyone knows, you know, that it is about performance now, I believe, and clearly Bernier hasn't performed well enough for Mike Babcock's liking, and the coach has not hid that really from any day in the last month. He's had very sharp comments consistently on Bernier's play.
In conversation with Chris Johnson on the Jeff Blair Show, your article on Connor McDavid on Sportsnet.ca was very interesting, talking about Connor McDavid kind of taking lessons from Tony Romo and his rehab and his return. And I'm wondering if you think that Connor McDavid learned something about himself last year when he came back, or when he had to recover from that hand injury as a result of that fight, and maybe it was a little bit of a lesson for him in a positive way, you know, and that you really, it's one thing to have a bunch of people tell you, hey, take your time, heal, that's the way you do it, don't rush back, and another thing to do that and have it actually work out and go, yeah, you know what, all that stuff everybody's telling me, it works.
Right, and it's slightly different circumstances, because if you remember last year, one of the things looming over McDavid when he suffered that injury was, would he get back for the World Juniors? You know, would he be able to play in that tournament? We don't really have, at least in my eyes, the same kind of, you know, a pressing return date. I mean, other than we know that every player, especially someone in his shoes, would want to play as absolutely soon as possible. But, you know, I think he'll be smart. And, you know, he's got good representation working for the Bobby Orr Group as his agency. And obviously Bobby had a fantastic NHL career, but one cut short by injuries. And, you know, I do think the Oilers will take the long view because, you know, as we've already seen with last night's loss, I mean, they're more in the conversation for the draft lottery again than the playoffs. And, you know, there's no competitive reasons why they would want this guy back, you know, soon. So I would expect ultimate caution to be shown here because, you know, really it's more about the future for Connor McDavid and the Oilers than now. And you know, while he is ahead of schedule, I think everyone's trying to tap the brakes. Is sort of my feeling or my read on the situation here that you know that they're not going to rush him back, and it might end up being a little bit longer than, you know, a timeline that's been thrown out there is mid-January. I wouldn't be surprised if it's closer to the All-Star break at the end of January or even beyond that.
Chris, how concerned are people around the Oilers that, I'm not going to say the guy is brittle or anything like that, but, you know, we've already seen, we have evidence in this league, or we saw Sidney Crosby, different situation, but we saw his career, damaged by the concussion. Certainly, I think we can say that he was removed from the game for a while. You know, is there any concern with Connor McDavid that, this could be one of those situations where, because of the way the guy plays, he's always going to be, people are going to be hitting him. He's probably going to be engaging in contact himself, that this sort of could be a regular thing. Not that he's going to break a shoulder, but that he's a guy who is not going to necessarily go out of his way to avoid trouble all the time, I guess is the way I'd put it.
Well, I've never heard that expressed. I mean, the one thing about McDavid, he's in absolutely fantastic shape, sort of in addition to his God-given gifts. And it was really a freak accident, type of play where he was, ridden into the end boards. And I haven't even heard that sort of quietly floated as an idea around, from anyone, connected to the organization or that knows Connor well. I do think it's just unfortunate. I mean, let's face it, we all want the best players playing. And he had made, in a span of just the 13 games he played, like, I found the Oilers were already appointment viewing. I was watching every game, to see what he was going to do. He was really coming on, and I think it has cast a bit of a pall on the season, because this is an embarrassing situation for Edmonton. Not McDavid's injury, but where they sit now with 30th again a possibility, and unable, it seems, to get out of the same sort of cycle they've been in. And I'm not sure what the long-term answer is, but I don't think that they're worried about McDavid, but they're just being very, very careful. I mean, hey, they're treating him differently. One thing I found interesting is that they've been sending him video clips of, their various systems work on the power play and things to keep his mind obviously engaged in what they're doing, but to make him feel a part of, the program there still, even while he's out, because sometimes injured players do feel a little detached from the team. I think they're going to great lengths to keep them interested, and they're expecting them to save things in a lot of ways, even though they'd never say that. And they need to make sure he's in the best shape possible when he comes back.
Chris, I know this is a loaded question, but what do the Oilers have to do? You watched them last night, I understand that they've got a new coach, there's a new structure, I get all that, but I also operate under the assumption, as I think most people do, that one of the things really, really talented, naturally gifted athletes are good at, for the most part, is falling into structure, or at least being able to understand some of the things that are trying to be implemented. You have to have a certain amount of athletic sense to be a great athlete, and you should be able to fit into a certain structure, certain system. I watched last night. I didn't think they worked particularly hard. What is it with that team?
Well, I think it's sort of a two-pronged effect. And we have to remember Peter Chiarelli and Todd McLellan are new there. And, I do think that does allow some time where we don't overreact and say it's not working. And so, first of all, you have McLellan and really by all means a top NHL coach. And you have to believe he's starting to get things right from a systems perspective. I think more importantly, what needs to happen is at some point, I would think within the next 6 months, when Peter Chiarelli has a real take on what he has with the organization, he's got to, I believe, address the needs on the blue line. I do think it starts there. And it probably means trading one of their top forwards. I know that's been discussed, but it's the most clear and obvious answer, I guess, to how they might go about getting some higher end players on the blue line. But I hate to say it, but I do think that's going to take a bit of time. But I think that's what the priorities have to be. Then obviously getting McDavid back healthy and all that will go on its way. But I still think that there's some personnel issues there, and you just can't solve those problems right away, especially with a new GM. I think the most dangerous thing you would do is if you started, making a lot of rash decisions. I think you really have to be careful about what you do and make sure you arm yourself with the best knowledge to make that decision. But it's a tough year. I mean, with the new building next year, should help with some hope. But, you know, I do think we're going to see a vastly different team on the ice as well, with in terms of personnel.